The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
2016, and it's back to reality as a host of big names return to end the last few months of giddy reverie. Chelsea, Man United, Barry Glendinning. Oops, don't know how that name got on there. Yes, it's as you were in football. We ask after the chimes of midnight on the 31st, is the spell broken in the Premier League? Will Leicester ever score again? And whose glass slipper is that? Elsewhere, there's transfers. We boldly predict that, yes, they will happen. We get semi-excited over the League Cup, indignant over standard Liège and substandard Charlton, and agog over the 500 beer challenge. Did he make it, listeners? Did he make it? All of that plus Sidlow's most maudlin performance ever in this Football Weekly. That's maudlin spelt Magdalene, of course, listeners, and welcome to Football Weekly with our best pod lineup this year, without question. John Ashdown's here.
Hiya.
He's wearing... What are you wearing, John?
I'm wearing a Sheffield United onesie, which I've just picked up, a late Christmas present that I've just picked up from an old friend of the office. So that's make me feel very comfortable today.
It's bright red. If you click on the picture we've posted of this on Twitter, you can
interact with me in some way.
Looks a little bit sweaty in there, John.
It's warm. It's toasty. It's cozy.
Like Teletubby-ish.
It is, isn't it?
Thanks,
all right. That's Barry Glendinning.
Hello. Good day.
Good day, Barry. It's remarkable to have you here, and yet at the same time feels so very natural.
Good.
Good. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Did you have a good time?
I had an absolute ball. Yes. Thank you very much for asking.
All right. Also here, Raphael Honigstein. Happy New Year, Rafa.
Happy New Year, Jimbo.
Thank you very much. Is it going to be a happy New Year, do you think? If you're a fan of one of those overachieving minnows, is it not going to be a happy New Year? This weekend did seem to be a little bit like, wham, playtime's over. Here come the big names again. I'm talking about Chelsea at Crystal Palace for a start.
Yeah, it was a good performance from Chelsea, but I think Crystal Palace really helped them out in a big way. I thought Crystal Palace weren't terrible, even though they lost 3-0, but their use of their possession they had was very poor. They kept trying to get in early crosses, and delivery after delivery was repeatedly overhit. So it's just squandering possession in that fashion. I'm looking at you, Wilfred Zaha, in particular.
Well, I think you were looking at me. His
deliveries were really poor.
Right.
But it's a good result for Chelsea. John Obi Mikel was excellent. Cesc Fabregas was excellent for them.
When you got back and turned on the TV and watched Chelsea winning and Obi Mikel playing really well, did you have a kind of Charlton Heston moment? Like, what on earth's happened in the last 6 weeks?
Well, I did sort of see football in Australia. Oh. They do have televisions there.
All right, then.
And you can actually watch any Premier League game you want on a Saturday afternoon, inverted commas, if you're happy to get up in the middle of the night and do. But I watched all the Monday night games. They're on at quite a convenient time. You can get up early, about 7:30 and watch them. They've got highlight packages as well.
All right, so Mikel played well. Fabregas put through one of those balls that he used to do for that opening goal.
Yeah, although Delaney misjudged it slightly, didn't he, and could have cut it out on a different day, perhaps.
Mm.
Not wanting to pick
in a different holes. Year.
Yeah, maybe. Go on, Beth, sorry.
So, Yannick Bolasie and Johan Caballé were big misses for Crystal Palace, and Connor Wickham to an extent as well. He's not very prolific, but he is good at running into the channels and dragging defenders out of position, and Chelsea's back four were clearly very pleased with themselves yesterday for keeping the clean sheet, which, I think they're second in a row, whereas last year it was just routine. If I was a Chelsea fan, I wouldn't get too excited about this result, but it is a step in the right direction.
Is it not the result that says they are back?
No.
Oh, okay. They didn't seem to miss Hazard very much when he went off.
He didn't look like he was particularly in the mood for playing at all, did he? I don't know if it was the weather or the fact whether he wants to go to Real Madrid or a combination of both. But, yeah, he just didn't really look like his heart was in it. Now, he could well have picked up an injury that was serious, but Gus Hiddink didn't look too convinced, and I have to say I wasn't either, but I could be wrong on that score.
Is he off, Rafa?
I'm not sure he's going to be off. I think Real Madrid will do their usual Real Madrid thing, which is to wait whoever emerges to star of the Euros and then buy him.
Oh, not in January?
No, not in January.
Right.
Don't see that.
Still down in 14th, a whopping 13 points off the top four. To put that into perspective, that's even more points off the top four than Aston Villa are from safety. Just saying. Man United, meanwhile, also, boom, they're back. Mighty 2-1 win against the exciting Swansea, ending Swansea's run of three straight clean sheets. There's no way they were keeping their sheets clean against Martial and backheel-tastic win, really. Rafa, from your expression, I'm guessing you're not that convinced by Man United's comeback here.
How can you be convinced by Man United? I mean, they're just not playing decent football. And again, I think Van Gaal changed the system. He made a great play about United being able to utilise their system really well, playing really well. But I think nobody who saw that game came away thinking, yeah, this team has started clicking.
One man did.
Yeah,
it's true. Louis. I remember asking Louis van Gaal after the 0-0 against Spurs on Boxing Day last year, or it might have been New Year's Day, one or the other, how long it will take for this United to be a proper Louis van Gaal team, because he makes a great thing about having these Louis van Gaal teams, to the point where when he was at Bayern, he once ran into the dressing room with a sheet from other Champions League results saying, Ajax won, Barcelona won, Bayern won. All Louis van Gaal teams.
Ah.
Yeah. So he still feels that these are his teams. I don't think he, if he's really honest, feels that this team play any sort of recognisable Louis van Gaal football, unless Louis van Gaal football has now become a synonym for just being stodgy and one-paced and terribly ineffective.
Mm. He said he preferred the first half to the second, which has left a lot of observers perplexed.
I think that is probably not perplexing, because he would have told the team to play in a certain way, and they probably followed the letter to the law in terms of the positioning, what they did. It might not have been very effective, but he would have been very pleased. Whereas my guess is, it's hard to see when you're not actually in the stadium and see the whole pitch.
Right.
My guess is they maybe actually took a bit more freedom themselves in the second half, which he then thought, it's not what I asked them to do.
Absolutely.
Even if them breaking ranks and their insubordination leads to two goals.
Yeah.
He will see that as a lucky accident that really shouldn't happen, because the system will prevail and et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Well, Ashley Young, who shone in his kind of wing-back role, set up Martial. And then Martial returned the favour for, set up Wayne Rooney. Fabulous little backheel flick there. That's his first goal in 2 months for the winner after your friend Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Rooney's goal was nice. Roofed a backheel. Nothing wrong with that.
Did he roof it? I thought it stayed more or less ground level.
It went airborne.
Did it? It was very nicely done.
Next weekend is FA Cup weekend.
Yes.
Which I'm sure we'll be previewing in full on Thursday. But Manchester United hosting my boys, Sheffield United.
Ah.
Team of the onesie. And given the way that we're playing at the moment, should be a very easy afternoon for Manchester United. So they've got a weekend
off. They do easy afternoons anymore.
Yeah, but it'll be as easy as it can possibly be.
Really?
I think, yeah.
Has the pressure now lifted on Van Gaal? Apparently there were no reportings of Mourinho scarves, for example, on sale at Old Trafford.
Yeah, it seemed to be imminent and very much on the brink.
Yeah.
And then it's all sort of gone slightly quiet. It's the pressure is certainly eased, but I don't know if that's due to any sort of change of plan higher up in United, or if it's just, things have moved on just a
It does
touch.
Seem that United would be delighted not to have to change managers at this point. Although, had, say, Ashley Williams or that Fabianski header crept the other side of the post, then, maybe we'd be looking at a different scenario this
Yeah, there are only a couple of results Van Gaal's only a couple of results from being back in the doldrums, isn't he, really?
They're also only 3 points away from being back in the top three. Huh.
It is fascinating, I think, the whole United thing. It seems to me that there is no real clear strategy of what they want to do, what they're trying to achieve. And I think
so the risk... So on or off the field?
Off, yeah. And I feel that they probably saw the risk of replacing Van Gaal with somebody like Mourinho greater as the risk of sticking with Van Gaal, at least until the end of the season.
Mm.
But it just depends how much tolerance you have for bad results, because as John said, they could easily miss out on the Champions League, which I think would be a big blow.
Certainly it would.
It wouldn't be as big a blow as it might have been because of all this money in the Premier League now, but I think Ed Woodward, the chief executive, has proved himself fairly inept in most departments apart from generating, you know, partnerships with savoury snack companies and cars. And if he fires Louis van Gaal, that's sort of an admission that he clearly doesn't know what he's doing when it comes to appointing managers. So it would not be in his best interest to see the back of van Gaal, because it would possibly result in him losing his job as well.
Mm, I hear you. Transfer-wise, with records been patchy, but there's a lot of people linking them with all sorts of big names again this January, including, Rafa, your brightest prospect of the Bundesliga, Leroy Sané, who's generally associated with the other Manchester team. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. Bild had a story today saying Manchester City are imminent in planning a raid.
Oh, great.
Of 55 million euros. Now, you have to say, if you want to spend 80 million euros on Martial, the force of 55 million euros on Sané probably isn't as crazy as it sounds. But in my view, he would not be somebody who can immediately take you to a markedly different level of performance, because he is very young and very inconsistent, as young players happen to be. And I think for him, it would be an absolute disaster to make that move right now.
He's at Schalke.
Yes.
He's an attacking midfielder.
Yes.
Which, of course, they're really lacking at Man City right now.
He can play in the hole. You know, he's sort of a number 10, or can play wide, can play as a second striker.
Right.
He's a great talent.
Uh-huh.
You know, do you buy talents for 55 million euros?
That would be a German record, is that right?
Yes, he'd be the most expensive player ever. Mm. I think he will be definitely hot in the man, but this is somebody who's never played for Germany, who's barely holding down a starting position at Schalke. I mean, it does sound
insane,
a little bit fanciful.
You know, or insane.
Yeah, a little bit fanciful.
Right, okay. Any other Bundesliga transfer possibilities that are like Aubameyang?
Aubameyang is the one that people get very excited about. In many ways, he'd be the perfect Arsenal striker, because he's a little bit Henri-esque. You know, he's a winger who's been converted into a striker, and he's playing tremendously well at the moment. Probably the in-form, one of the in-form strikers in Europe, absolutely no doubt. Really quick, great movement, wonderful player. And Thomas Tuchel has taken him to a whole new level this season as well. The problem, there's two issues with this. A is he's just signed a new deal till 2020, so it would take absolutely ridiculous amounts of money for Dortmund to sell him. I don't think they'll sell it now at any stage. In any case, January, I think, is just not realistic. The other thing is that I'm dubious about the Arsenal link, because Wenger himself, of course, passed on him a couple of years ago, and I think he strikes me as the sort of guy who doesn't really change his opinion of players very much. If he thinks that in 2013 you're not an Arsenal player, I'm not sure he will now believe he's an Arsenal player. Mm. And that he could have picked him up for 10 million euros from Saint-Etienne. Is he the sort of manager who will now pay five times the money for him? I'm not sure. The other thing is that he, of course, is on the record of saying, Aubameyang, that he dreams of playing in Spain. His mother's from Spain. His ambition is to, at one stage, go to play for Real Madrid or Barcelona. And I think in the meantime, he's very happy and very settled at Dortmund. So it does seem a bit of a long shot. But it's inevitable, I think, that these stories arise, because he is such an amazing player. And Dortmund, very wrongly in my view, are still seen as a club who are just waiting for these offers to come in, because they want to sell everybody to the Premier League. In fact, they, of course, haven't sold anyone apart from Kagawa. Everybody else has just left because they couldn't hold on to him, because they didn't have a contract with him,
right,
like Lewandowski or Götze. So I think it would be very hard to shift him in the summer, impossible in January. Swear.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you have many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design, so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.
Wow, that Squarespace advert was certainly lively, which is good, because producer Ben's just told us that we need to lively our stuff up. Those weren't his exact words. Sorry if it was a slightly moribund part one.
Was it? But,
well, apparently, producer Ben's not excited by it. Let's see how he deals with Whammo. Arsenal beating Newcastle. The goal from Koscielny.
Yeah, I was there.
Oh, yeah. All right, Rafa. How thrilled were you at this?
Oh, it was dull. Right, I'm not sure this is going to lively up the conversation.
All right.
But I think we should quickly give a nod to Arsenal because they are league leaders.
Right, yeah, let's do that. No. Nod away.
It was actually quite interesting, even though it was a horrible game.
Right.
Because the crowd almost seemed to be happy that it was such a terrible game, but Arsenal still managed to win it. I mean, the applause at the end was rapturous. There were, people were saying, this is the sort of game that you need to win.
I've always thought it's the mark of a champion, to grind out a 1-0 win.
They certainly wanted to believe it.
Just bear those words in mind as this season progresses.
They certainly wanted to believe that. And it felt sort of fairly momentous, even though it was just a really bog-standard 1-0 win, which is a bit flattering and a bit
fortuitous. What felt momentous about it?
Well, the fact that Arsenal didn't do the Arsenal thing and actually grinded out a win playing badly.
But they always beat Newcastle.
Yeah, but not in such unconvincing fashion.
Yeah.
I mean, Newcastle should have won this game. If they had a striker, they would have won.
Yeah, drawn. I'm not sure about one. Drawn. But it's
struggling without Cissé because he's going to be out for a while, isn't he?
He's not good anyway.
Isn't he?
He's very hot and cold.
Oh, okay. And they're in the bottom three, so problems for them.
They played well. I must say, I think I was surprised how well they played. I think so were Arsenal. I think they certainly the crowd were expecting an easy 3-4-0 walkover with Mesut Ozil scoring 5 goals and assisting 5 of them. But it didn't happen. But the fact that it didn't happen almost, seemed to delight people.
Right.
And of course, the focus changed a little bit away from Ozil and to Peter Cech, who I must admit didn't think would have such a big impact, but he has having a huge impact. And could well, I'm just throwing out there, could well be the first goalkeeper to win Player of the Year award since Neville Southall in 85. I think he's been that good.
It's quite possible. Man City, although they got Aguero scoring again, that's good. Barry, you minuted this game. What was the best minute for you?
The best minute? I really enjoyed Yaya Toure's equaliser.
He's
just so casual.
A bit like the one against Arsenal. Again, was like, oh, go on then.
Ambled towards the near post and side-footed this volley in from a pretty difficult angle, and very casual. I thought City, you'd have to applaud their resilience. I wasn't that impressed with them. It was a pretty workmanlike performance. Watford probably should have put the game beyond them before they equalised. And Eliquim Mangala just looked all over the place in centre-half position for City. Deeney and Ighalo impressed again for Watford. And, Bakary Sagne's cross for Aguero's winner was absolutely superb.
Okay.
But, it was a very good game. I enjoyed it.
Good.
Ighalo is a fantastic player. Really, wonderful to see him in the flesh.
Right. Were you there then?
I was at the Chelsea-Watford game.
Oh, right, okay.
So I'm there.
Yeah, good.
Very good.
But Watford's terrific run, ending with that. Arsenal got the win against Newcastle. Palace got beaten by Chelsea. And Leicester failing to... Little Leicester couldn't beat Bournemouth. And equally, little Bournemouth couldn't beat Leicester. So that's, a 0-0.
But Leicester were a bit unlucky.
Were they? I mean, they didn't score the penalty for a start.
I don't think they should have got the penalty in the first place.
Really?
I didn't think it was a foul. I can see why Andre Mariner gave it because he, from his point of view, it probably looked like a foul, but replays show it wasn't a foul. Simon Francis, I thought it was harsh sending off. I can see why it was the red card was given, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it's overturned.
Good result for 10-man Bournemouth to hang on for that goalless draw. And they've got Wanniturbi turning up now, so we'll see how much impact that makes. Leicester?
I bet that's a headline you never thought you'll see in your life.
Yeah.
Iturbi going to
just another one, yeah. Leicester, three games now without a goal. John?
Yeah, although, you know, they played really well against Man City over Christmas. Could easily have won that. Could have beaten Bournemouth. I mean, it's just, you know, a couple of the tight ones were bound to, you know, go against them or perhaps not fall for them eventually.
They're still second.
They're still second.
I wouldn't say the bubble's burst. It does seem to be slowly deflating, though. And I think they've a run of fixtures coming up. Spurs away, Villa away, Stoke at home, Liverpool at home, Man City away, and Arsenal away. So they're all tough games apart from Villa, probably. And that, I would imagine, will tell you how they're going to finish the season.
Right. We'll have to see how Jamie Vardy comes back from his groin surgery as well.
They did come through their earlier really tough run really well, it must be said. I didn't think that they would only lose one of the last 10 games.
Wow. Also, on Sunday, Spurs held at Everton. John?
Yeah, it was a cracking game.
Mm.
Yeah, really good. Spurs were the better side for the first sort of 25 minutes, and then Everton scored a cracker against the run of play. Aaron Lennon rolling back the years with a sort of half volley. And Dele Alli pulled one back before half time, and it could have gone either way.
What a goal from Dele Alli.
Yeah, it was a lovely goal. And Spurs almost scored two other superb goals. Ben Davies crashed one against the bar, and Kane hit the inside of the post as well. It could have gone either way in the second half.
Did you not think that Tottenham maybe deserved it more?
Yeah, Tottenham were the better team. Mm. But Martinez made a couple of changes, and bringing Besic on made a difference and gave them a bit of a platform.
Right.
Started breaking up Tottenham's attacks a bit higher up the pitch. Cracking game. And I think it probably bodes well for both teams, really. I thought Tottenham with that sort of that front four, I think is terrific that they have, and I'm slightly dubious about how good Tom Carroll and Eric Dier are at the base of that midfield, particularly in the second half once Everton started hassling them a little more. They didn't look quite as comfortable. People are sort of talking over the weekend about Spurs being, you know, potentially winning the title, but I can't see them getting, you know, getting 6 points more than Arsenal over the next, you know, 18 games.
Right.
Okay. I didn't see this because I was on my way to the Dart, but is there not a case to be made? So I don't know how either team play, but is there not a case to be made to say that Everton are hugely underachieving with the quality players they have in the squad?
Yeah, it's a case that has been, to an extent, made.
Okay.
Because they really should. It's also, some of their performances, even, maybe not the results, but some of the performances lead you to think, wow, this is a really exciting football team in the making. But when you look down at the table, they're in 11th place.
And when you look at some of the teams above them, of course, you know, in this brave new world,
exactly,
then they should surely be up around the top four.
Of course, a cup run, say a place in the League Cup final, might change people's perceptions on how well Martinez is doing there. They've got a semi-final against Man City coming up on Wednesday. City won the League Cup back in 2014 and are favourites for it this year. But Everton are something of a bogey team, or as Van Gaal would say, a ghost team. Would that be a geist team? I don't know what the Dutch for.
No, Angstgegner.
Really?
In German. Angst.
Okay. Okay. Anyway, but he called Swansea a ghost team. But back to Everton Man City.
Yeah. I guess if you're looking for sort of reasons for optimism for Everton, it will perhaps mean a bit more to them than it will to City, who have, you know, perhaps playing for a little bit more in the league.
Martinez, good cup manager as well.
Yeah, he's had that FA Cup win with Wigan, didn't he? Everton, if they're a bit hot and cold. I mean, they've got sort of issues at the back with Jagielka being out for so long, and I don't think Tim Howard's quite the goalkeeper he was a couple of years ago.
Right.
But going forward, if it all clicks, then they're a fantastic team. With Lukaku,
one win in seven.
Yeah. But, I mean, yesterday could have been two wins in seven.
Right.
It could have been. They just draw too many games. That is the issue. And I think that's... Martinez is one of those managers who wants his team to control games at all times, which sometimes doesn't perhaps lack the sometimes likes to push at right. the end. You know, when you have these Premier League games and just erupt into sheer madness in the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Everton don't really do that. They're quite happy to keep the ball, play around. It's tough. So,
and particularly with the players that he's got, you'd think with, you know, Barkley and with Deulofeu, you'd be better off sort of letting them off the leash that little bit more.
Mm. Yeah, although I'm not a big fan of Barkley.
You're not a fan of Barkley?
But that's for another time.
Stoke-Liverpool's the other League Cup semi-final. Just before Ben gets another of his breaks out of the way, let's look at this. They both come in off defeat. Stoke beaten by West Brom this weekend. And Liverpool losing to West Ham. Jurgen Klopp saying three angry words to his team afterwards. Because it's, you know, it's not a million miles away from the 3-0 defeat at the start of the season, of course, which precipitated the whole Brendan Rodgers thing, although it was pretty much already precipitated by stuff last year. But, Rafa, at this point, did you expect more from Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool?
A little bit more. Mm. A little bit more. I mean, I think he's done okay. I think there were those big wins which really suggest that something is changing.
But wasn't that back at the start when everyone's like, new manager bounce, this is exciting, Jurgen
Klopp? Well,
he's
only been there 2 months, so...
Yeah, but it's kind of worn off a bit, hasn't it? There's, let's try gegenpressing. We'll run really hard.
Well, I'm not sure, because when they beat Leicester and Sunderland, people said, he actually was asked quite earnestly, are Liverpool title contenders?
Were they after the Leicester?
Yes, after the Sunderland game.
After the Man City one, I remember that. But
no, after the Leicester game as
really?
Well. Really? So one defeat now,
right?
I don't think should send you back to rubbish.
My only concern would be that they were very unconvincing in victory over Sunderland, and they were
pretty convincing
diabolical
in
against West Ham.
Yeah.
So, I wasn't impressed at all. And as for running very hard, that's certainly not something Christian Benteke could be accused of. Mm. He was a disaster on Saturday.
Who was running pretty hard was that fellow Antonio.
I can't believe more isn't being made of the fact that he appeared to emulate the Flash in the manner in which he won the ball at one corner flag and then somehow contrived to be on hand to head past Nathaniel Clyne 3 seconds later.
The sort of moves that Louis van Gaal would have hated.
Yeah. He didn't actually run that fast when you watch it back. That's the scary thing for
me. I don't know how he made
you
up that ground, though. Because I was doing the minute by minute. I was trying to who's headed? I thought it was Antonio that headed home. And then I thought, it can't be him, because he was just there.
Yeah, that's scary, isn't
it? He ran the length of the pitch.
To go back to Liverpool, what's so disappointing is that they've had these performances that were completely bereft of any energy.
Mm.
At Watford, they never turned up. West Ham.
Would that be a training thing, do you think? Is it different training that he's putting them through?
Well, I don't think you can actually train at the moment.
Right.
Because you have too many games. Uh-huh. So what you just do is just a bit of warm downs and a few maybe tactical things, but you can't actually do proper training. There just isn't enough time and the players are too tired. So I don't know how much he can do in terms of the fitness and stuff, but I think he is trying to figure out whether their style of playing is something that is sustainable. I mean, no one's really done it throughout the season. Southampton under Pochettino, yes or no, but then it fizzled away a little bit. At Spurs, it's not as extreme, the pressing. I don't think that... it's untested.
Right.
Because of the amount of games, because the way the pitches tend to get quite heavy. I mean, the West Ham pitch on television looked absolutely...
Liquid football.
Awful. Mm. Awful. And it's hard to play that way. But it's not an excuse, because I think it was really disappointing how to just never win a position. I have a theory that this year, because of... the games falling on the 2nd of January,
yes,
players were actually more tired than usual, because when it's on New Year's Day, they tend to stay in for New Year's Eve. I think this time,
right,
some of them went, the game's only in 2 days' time.
Didn't seem to affect West Ham too much, or a noted party man Andy Carroll and his exciting new hairdo.
Yeah, he was very good, very impressive, and Slaven Bilic made a point after the game of saying that now is the time for him to kick on and stop his hard drinking, nightclubbing ways.
Oh, right.
Did he say it?
But those weren't his exact words, but it's pretty clear what he was implying. Yeah. Mm.
Stop your Jägermeister bothering.
Yes,
Andy Carroll.
Indeed. Mm. James Collins and Obana in the centre of defence, they were both really good as well, but you know, it was pretty straightforward. They didn't. They had a lot of high balls to deal with, but they dealt with them all afternoon. And that seemed to be Liverpool's only plan. You know, I don't think anyone's expecting early miracles from Jurgen Klopp, but...
I was.
They did see... How were you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that seemed to be their only plan. Get the ball up to a very immobile Christian Benteke.
Who, right.
I think there'd been talk that he'd had a chat with Jurgen Klopp, or more that Jurgen Klopp had a chat at him, telling him to put himself about a bit more.
And ha!
He didn't really do that.
No. It's right. A big problem when you can't actually threaten the player with the bench because he knows he's, you know, he's right. There and he has to play. Some players, especially strikers, take huge confidence from that. Others, perhaps.
Not so much. West Ham in sixth place. They've moved past Liverpool now. Liverpool dropping to eighth. West Ham... just a point behind Man United. Ooh, what's going to happen when Liverpool play Stoke in the League Cup semi-final? Again, John, coming to you. Two-legged. First leg is at the Britannia.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty hard to tell because Stoke are equally inconsistent at the moment.
Mm.
You know, had a couple of absolutely superb performances and a couple of very dicey ones, including this weekend. Again, it's a really hard one to call, I think. I have a feeling that Stoke might try and sneak it sort of 1-0 over the two legs.
Really? Is that the Stoke way?
I think they're capable of doing that.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. All right. Looking forward to that anyway.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Or is actually, that just I'm, talk?
No, I'm actually more interested in the Stoke Liverpool than I am the Everton Man City. I think Stoke are an intriguing thing because the result, they do get a lot of these kind of clean sheets and 1-0s, and yet that front line seems to indicate an entirely different approach. But yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see.
Wasn't it a clean sheet against Everton, though? Was it?
What,
the
4-3. It's 4-3, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, that's true. That is true. And that was an exciting game, though.
It was very exciting.
Yeah. Maybe
they're an exciting team.
Aren't they, though?
Which is
more than
a bit paradoxical if you think of Stoke in the past.
It's just one of the many kind of cognitive dissonantly things about this whole... John Ashton's back.
They've scored fewer goals than Sunderland this season, Stoke.
What?
Yeah.
Check your numbers. No, you're not reading that right, John.
Stoke have scored 21 and Sunderland have scored 22.
Well, John, we'll talk more about Sunderland later on, but after this, we're going to be off to sunny Spain. Hey, Sid Lowe.
Hello, Jimbo. How are you?
I'm very well. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Yeah.
Happy New Year to you, Sid. Your friends Barry, John Ashdown, Raphael Honigsteiner here.
Hey, Sid.
They're all waving.
Hello.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, Raphael wants to know, is it actually sunny in Spain, or was that lazy journalism?
Who said it was sunny in Spain?
I said it was sunny in Spain.
Oh, I see. Well, yeah, that's lazy journalism. Well, it's certainly where I am. It's the glamour of sports writing, Jimbo. I'm sitting on a floor by a station toilet because it's the only place I can find a plug socket.
Right.
And it's windy and cloudy in Valencia, but quite warm.
All right, lovely. You're in Valencia. You've just been there to see Sunday's exciting Valencia draw with Real Madrid. 2-2, the final score.
Yeah, it was a pretty bonkers game. And it was a game where everything kind of came in pairs, and I know that's stating the bleeding obvious when it finished 2-2, but for example, you've got the two chances in the last minute, one for each team. You've got Valencia equalising 71 seconds after Madrid scored. You've got Valencia getting the penalty in the same move, basically, in which Madrid were appealing for a penalty. You've got the fact that obviously then it ends 2-2, and it was one of those games where it felt like it could have gone either way, and had it done so, could have had, you know, really pretty significant consequences. And with the draw, I must admit, I don't really know what the consequences are going to be.
All right, let's talk about the manager, Sid. Gary Neville, still looking for his first league win, but presumably a 2-2 draw against Real Madrid is a boost to his position.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the way they played as well, that the fact that they created a reasonable amount of chances, that they ran at Madrid, that Neville, when it was 2-2, went for the 3-2 rather than trying to stick with that. I think there's a sense as well of improvement, certainly in the second half against Villarreal in the previous game, and bit by bit they're getting a little bit closer to what Neville wants. They're physically not very fit still, I think. I think, you know, he's had a lot of players injured, he's had a lot of players playing too many minutes, and with time that should get better. I think they're more or less heading in the right direction, but yeah, of course, the bottom line still is six games, only one win, and that was against third tier team in the Copa del Rey.
Right. Were there any touching reunions between him and Cristiano Ronaldo?
Well, you know what? Not that I saw. Now, it might well be that I just didn't see it, to be honest, but right. I wasn't aware of one. I mean, it was a big part of the build-up to the game, and a lot of the Spanish newspapers really interested in kind of going back over the Manchester United history and their relationship and so on. But actually at the ground, obviously far more significant was a sense of a welcome back for Rafa Benitez.
Right, yeah, that was the other reunion. Valencia fans delighted to see him again, possibly delighted to see him as the Real Madrid manager. Real Madrid fans don't seem to be as enthusiastic. And I noticed the Madrid press this morning, not convinced at all. Benitez solo hizo un cambio y dejó sin jugar a Isco y James.
Yeah. So for those who don't speak Spanish, yeah, he made only one change and left both Isco and James out of the team. Didn't even put them on when they perhaps
James,
could have,
I think,
could have used them.
Sid?
Well, James, James. Well, everyone calls him James here.
James, okay. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, James, who, by the way, I mean, I assume you've seen the story about James, who was chased by police at 200 kilometres an hour.
It's a brilliant photo of him actually arriving at the training ground with the popo on his tail. Now, so he was doing 200 kilometres an hour.
Yes, and they kind of used a megaphone to tell him to stop and had the blue light on top of the car. It was an unmarked police car. Now, his argument was twofold, or at least the argument that's been expressed sort of effectively on his behalf was twofold. One was that he didn't know that this was a police car because it was plain clothes, and he feared that it might actually be a kidnapping. And actually, I suppose in that context, maybe it does make some sense to drive to somewhere where you know there's security guards who know you and then let the police deal with it with them there. That said, you don't necessarily need to do it at 200 kilometres an hour. And it's slightly contradicted by his other excuse, which is, of course, the police have got the sirens going they put on the top of the car. And he said, I didn't hear it. I had the music at full blast. Now, I don't know about you, but if you're getting chased at 200 kilometres an hour and you think it might be a kidnapping, I'm not sure you put the music on, unless maybe he's got a CD of car chase music or possibly the Benny Hill theme.
That's brilliant, Sid. That's brilliant. Anyway, so is he going to be in trouble for that, do you think?
Well, in theory, at least, yeah. I mean, the very least, there'll be a fine. The chances are that his license will be taken off him. In theory, he could even get a prison sentence. Now, that won't happen.
Right.
But yeah, he could be in trouble. Gary Neville was quite nice. He was asked about it before the game in the pre-match pressers, and he said, to be honest, I'm more worried about how fast he is on the pitch than off it.
Sid, I have to ask you, and apologies if you've been asked this before on this pod, but are these Mourinho stories, are they real, or is it just planted stuff by Jorge Mendes that gullible journalists like...
Like me.
Not us, but others. Four. Please tell
me. Well, my this is no more than kind of interpreting and kind of putting together the little bits that we do know. But my feeling with the Mourinho situation is, look, I have very little doubt that the current president, Florentino Perez, would love the idea of Mourinho coming back. But of course, there's a reason why Mourinho left. And that situation is still the same. There are players at Real Madrid who pretty much would have to leave if Mourinho came back, and it would be an extremely unpopular thing. But of course, it kind of suits everyone to keep this idea suits a lot of people to keep this idea floating in the air. I think it suits Perez because it's a way of saying, well, you know, you're not happy with Benitez, but bear in mind it could get worse. You know, I could bring Mourinho in, so it kind of acts as a threat there. It feels to me that this is a play from Mourinho in a way, isn't it? That this is a manager who probably thinks that his options will be relatively limited in the summer when clubs have the time to decide over their manager, to think carefully, to have access to lots and lots of candidates. And I feel like, I mean, I just don't know this, but I feel like what Mourinho is doing now is knowing that he's on the market at a time when two really big clubs, Man United and Real Madrid, might want a new manager and therefore might feel almost kind of pushed into getting him now when they probably wouldn't go for him in the summer. And it feels to me that what he's trying to do is hurry United up by saying, oh, I could go to Madrid. And hurry Madrid up by saying, oh, I could go to United. And I suspect the truth is probably that he couldn't go to either. And certainly in the case of Madrid, Pérez likes the idea of him coming back. He floats the idea often of Mourinho being a really good manager and someone that he really kind of felt a connection with, which he doesn't feel a connection with most managers. But I just don't think it's plausible him coming back to Real Madrid.
All right, Sid. Did you enjoy Spanish football getting back to action early? And did you notice that there were polls asking about the introduction of a Boxing Day fixture list in the Liga?
Yeah, well, this is something that's very, I think, really a kind of a key part of everything that's happened this Christmas and Spain coming back early is it was seen as an English thing. Yeah, I mean, one of the newspapers was even calling it Boxing Day, even though it wasn't obviously actually Boxing Day. It was the 30th. This year happened really just because of their own lack of organisation. So they organise a load of fixtures. Vicente del Bosque, the Spain manager, said, well, wait a minute, this means that you're going to take a week of preparation off us for the European Championships. Mm. So they basically put that round, moved everything back so that Spain would have an extra week of preparation. The players' union are saying, this is a one-off. We did this as a sacrifice to help the national team. We will not do it again. Right. But the league want to do this, and they want to do it more often. And, of course, they have a huge vested interest in shouting about how massively successful this was. So in that round of games on the 30th, they had fan zones at all the grounds. They made a big deal about calling it La Liga non-stop, which is quite amusing because, of course, they'd stopped the week before. In fact, the round of games would have been on Boxing Day itself. The league would love to do this again, and right. I think they would do everything they can to make it happen again. But they're probably going to get resistance from the Federation, and they're definitely going to get resistance from the players.
All right. Sid, let's talk about the biggest clash of the whole Christmas festive period. And yes, I'm talking about Sheffield University against Magdalen College, Oxford. You on University Challenge. A lot of our listeners were very, very excited by this, Sid.
Were they? Yeah.
Yep.
Can I just add a very small, three very small words to your introductory text?
Would be three more than you said on University Challenge.
There we go. Sheffield University versus Magdalen College. That, those three words would be in the final.
In the final?
Yeah,
that's
in the
true.
Final.
You got past, who did you get past? Aberdeen?
I was Jimmy Traore for a minute there. I thought, wow, I might actually win something based entirely on the talents of my teammates.
Right. But did you make an answer? Did you get anything?
He got a few sort of consulting with his teammates.
The first game was dreadful.
Yeah, I saw the Aberdeen one.
Yeah, that was pretty bad, to be honest. The semi-final, I thought, was all right, though.
Barry?
Yeah, I mean, his buzzer wasn't working, obviously, but he did nod encouragingly when other people suggested answers.
I can't possibly say anything in my defence without it looking defensive. If
right. What was it like being?
I think I'm not going to.
What was it like being on University Challenge?
Just encouraging things. I was the tactical mastermind as well.
Right. Yeah. See, the whole experience of being on with Jeremy Paxman and having to climb those stairs to go and sit above the other team.
Yeah.
All those things.
Honestly, it was devastating to see that the two desks were side by side.
What?
It really was. I know.
All right, Sid. Congratulations, as I say. Many, many, felicitaciones for the Happy New Year. And we'll catch up with you soon. Have a good trip back once you get... I'm presuming you're getting on a train. You're not just there hanging around the station.
No, I will be getting on a train, but not for a while now. So I'm currently hanging around, as I say, by this toilet sitting on the floor. It's not particularly pleasant, but there you go.
That was Sid Lowe in cloudy and windy Spain. How's the weather in championship land, John Ashdown?
Squally.
Is it?
Yeah.
Squally.
As ever.
Mm.
Yeah.
Bar at top of the table.
Yeah, there was a ray of sunshine. No, that doesn't work, does it? Yeah, it doesn't work.
Ray of sunshine?
No, it was not really ray of sunshine. There was
with the baseline?
A moment of still clarity.
Was there?
Amid the sort of maelstrom of clouds.
Did you have an epiphany?
No, it wasn't for me, but it was for the table itself.
It's the right time of the year for one. But anyway, go on.
Yeah. Well, it was a battle of the top two at the weekend.
Ah, yeah.
And Middlesbrough beat Derby 2-0 at the Riverside to go 4 points clear with the game in hand.
7 wins and a draw in their last 8, Barra.
Yeah, they're in superb form. And, yeah, that gap is sort of suggesting that they're on their way back to the Premier League, which is kind of, they're sort of, weirdly, sort of nobody's... I don't get this sense of excitement about Middlesbrough being... back in the Premier League. I guess it's because they were there before. And
so another season of missing out on derbies is going to be.
Yeah, could well be, yeah. 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 Unless Hull get there as well, and then it's not really a derby, I don't think.
Right.
But, they're looking good. And the first goal was brilliant, really sort of nice little passing on the edge of the area, and then Albert Adoma was slipped through.
Right.
Hull had a big win. Speaking of Hull, had a big win at QPR. Mm. 90th minute, slightly fortuitous winner, which leaves Jimmy Floyd still waiting for his first win as QPR manager.
Right.
And Brighton were the big losers. They've gone 6 without a win now. No goals in 4. We sort of said that a couple of weeks ago, or at least I said that, once they lose one, because they had that long unbeaten run, once they lose one, then they'll stop all these draws and start winning. Well, they have stopped all the draws, but they've started losing instead. They've lost 3 of the last 4.
All right, down the other end of things, Bolton... they have settled some debts now, but they're in all sorts of trouble. And they lost 2-0 at home to Huddersfield, bottom of the table. 3 points above them, Charlton. Now, Rhys Griffiths saying, be great if you could mention the Charlton Athletic fan protests. These are protests against the Belgian duo,
Belgian owners,
who are stuffing up, in the view of most Charlton fans, the running of that club to quite an extraordinary extent.
Yeah, there was a couple of thousand. I mean, looking at the pictures, which is...
So they had a march.
There was a protest before the game, and right. there was a slightly bigger one after the game, after a 1-1 draw with Forest. Roland Duchatelet, who's the owner, took over in January 2014, has sort of blazed through a series of managers since then. They've currently got Carol Fry in charge, who's an interim manager.
Mm. And where's he from, John?
He's from the Belgian third division, VW Ham. And he's lost, I think, 8 of these 11 games in charge, something like that. The kind of setup there is almost like a mini Pozzo idea with, you know, sort of the Watford system of, you know, the Udinese and Granada, and sort of moving players around between the sort of network of clubs.
With the difference being that the Pozzos actually move good players around the team.
Yeah, well, they've got kind of quite good clubs.
Yeah.
And he's sold Standard Liège, isn't he?
Well, yeah, I think that he's been them off. But he's also got St. Truiden and Ujpest in Hungary.
Right.
Alcorcón in Spain. And Carl Zeiss Jena, apparently, in Germany. Jena.
Third division.
So there are quite a few of the sort of players that he's sold off people like Kimmelgen and Ben Hamer further up to teams further up the ladder, and brought in kind of quite a lot of the players that aren't quite of the high enough standard from those sort of network of clubs.
Mm.
And also, like, over Christmas, or certainly November time, the chief exec...
Katrin Mayer.
Yeah, had a press conference. Or was
Katrin. Katrin Mayer.
It was a
where she said that the new business model was going to be basically selling players to the Premier League.
Yeah, it was, it might be honest, but a bizarre thing to say, and obviously fans not
she
happy
also,
about that.
She also, she also made these comments where she said, fans don't see themselves as our customers. They complain when we do things, whereas if they go to a restaurant or a cinema and they don't like it, they don't complain.
Yeah, yeah.
But they do with us. It's weird.
It's weird, yeah. She basically said fans were weird for caring about their football club, essentially. The relations between the fans and the board are obviously in a horrendous way.
Well, we're chuckling, but this is desperate for a club that not so long ago, and of course it's even worse because Crystal Palace are doing brilliantly.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment they're bound for League One, which they... came out of back in 2012, I think it was.
Not long ago, yeah. So what are any prospects for optimism for one of your rays of light down there?
Well, there's some talk of, you know, people being interested in a takeover, but the chief exec apparently refused to talk to one of the previous owners, which, again, yeah, that sort of information has leaked out, which has, again, irritated fans even more because they want to see a change, and if the current owners are just not even... countenancing it, then it's looking pretty bleak.
Oh dear. All right. Well, the other team down there in the relegation places is Bristol City. Ooh, speaking of Bristol and that city, we'll be doing our first live show 2016 there at the Arnold Feeney Centre. That's on Thursday, the 11th of February. Ooh, it's now sold out. So, you know, if you bought your tickets, too late to change it now that I tell you that Barry's going to be there along with Simon Burton, James Horncastle, and myself. Have some of that, Bristol. A little note here from producer Ben on the subject of French football, Rafa. We're big fans. Alassina Traore scored 4 first-half goals. Did you see this in the French Cup? And got a red card. All in the first half of Monaco's game with Saint-Jean Beaulieu. Ah, Beaulieu.
Which finished 10-2, I believe.
It did finish 10-2, yeah. Yeah.
It's the most un-French game ever. Probably.
Yeah. He's 6'8". I didn't know that. He was shown red at the break following an altercation with Yann Mariotti, who was also dismissed. That's quite a first half of football. 4 goals and a red card for Lassina Traore. Wow. Just one other thing to discuss, dear listener, before we leave you to whatever it is you're up to on this fine Monday. And it is the back end of the Premier League. Yes. Mentioned the problems that the two North East clubs are having down in the bottom three. Sunderland, though... a mighty win, 3-1 over Aston Villa. Aston Villa are a funny lot, aren't they? I mean, that Hill goal...
It was brilliant.
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
And then some of the other stuff at the other end, not so much.
Yeah, their defending is appalling. I think they're so far behind now, I think they should probably resign themselves to the drop and start preparing for life in the Championship next season.
Mm.
Get rid of Remy Gard. He's not going to be able to manage them in the Championship. I'd say it's a division he knows absolutely nothing about. Possibly, I had a discussion with someone yesterday, get Nigel Pearson in, who knows the Championship inside out.
Right.
And get rid of as many players as they can and start buying sort of good Championship League One players in preparation for next season. Maybe Villa fans might think that's an outrageous suggestion, but I see it as the only realistic alternative to what's going on now, because we've seen teams pull off great escapes in the very recent past. Sunderland have done it twice. Leicester did it last season, but Villa just look absolutely hopeless.
Mm. That defending on the third goal, brilliant. My favourite bit of the weekend. Do you see Sunderland doing it a third time?
Escaping?
Yeah. You are 4 points off safety.
Right. It was a good win, a huge win, a very important win, but I haven't seen much of Sunderland in recent weeks because I've been away, but I did see their game against Liverpool in which they played quite well and still lost against a Liverpool side that was very poor, and that gave me no great reason for optimism.
Okay.
So, but yeah, they've done it twice in the recent past, so I wouldn't, you know, I'm not going to predict relegation.
All right then. So at the moment you've got, sorry, Rafa.
No, I was curious about the thing you said. Do you actually believe that the Championship is such a different kind of football that only indigenous managers can get it?
Well, Aitor Karanka have proved otherwise.
He didn't know anything about it before, presumably.
Yeah, but I think Remy Gard, he's quite an inexperienced manager.
That win percentage of zero is certainly eye-catching, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there are no signs of encouragement whatsoever at Villa, and I think the way they're going, they could conceivably get relegated from the Championship next season.
Hmm.
So, you know, if you just go to Remy Gard and say, look, this isn't working, we need someone with proven Championship pedigree who can try, hopefully get us out first time of asking if we get relegated, and then get, you know, Nigel Pearson or Mick McCarthy, yeah, someone like that.
Yes. All right.
Hear the strains of "Are you an ostrich?" echoing down the corridor.
I've actually figured out what he meant by that. Funnily enough, you're probably not interested in that, but ostrich thing.
Because the expression. Okay, go on, Rafi.
No, because it was so bizarre when he went on to say, "Well, I can do it,
yeah,
and you do it."
Yeah.
I think I understand now what he was trying to say. He was accusing a journalist of pretending not to have noticed stuff that was going on. So
yeah,
saying, "You're not really an ostrich, are you? That you put your hand. I can do it." He was saying, "I can ignore stuff. I don't believe that you can."
That's an interpretation. My interpretation
didn't put it very well. I saw the actual transcript, and suddenly it clicked.
Really?
Yeah.
See, here's what clicked for me. First of all, he said, "Are you an ostrich? Can you put your head in your sand? In the sand?"
Yeah, but the context of that was that...
No, that bit was, you know, are you ignoring...
You're telling me that you didn't notice it.
You didn't notice these things?
He didn't buy that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't buy that. And then he's kind of school PE teacher... DNA kicked in, and he looked at the less than sporty physique of the journalist, and after he'd said, you know, his ostrich thing about, can you put your head in your sand, he went, "No, I doubt you're flexible enough. You can't. I can." That was my reading of it. He was saying, "No, I am flexible enough to put my head
You don't need to be that flexible to put your head in the sand if you're lying down.
That's also true.
Nod your head.
But I think the ostrich model is very much that they're on their feet and then putting their head
Why
in the sand.
Why do they do that? Is it like a...
Well, they're to hide. It's like three-year-olds.
No, that's not true. Right. It's a myth.
It's true about three-year-olds. Perhaps you should have said, "Are you a three-year-old?
Yeah.
Are you putting your head behind the curtains while playing hide and seek?"
Three-year-olds.
Yeah, or dogs will do it sometimes. If they know they've done a bad thing, they'll sort of hide their head behind the sofa.
I wonder at what point of kind of human brain development they actually surpass dogs.
I know a lot of, well, not a lot of dogs. I know of a couple of dogs
yeah.
who are smarter, I would venture to say, than several humans of my right. acquaintance.
Yeah, I mean, it depends how you define intelligence, of course. Yeah.
Isn't it the bit where you, I'm trying to dredge up A-level psychology, but...
All right, then.
Yeah, so you when you recognise yourself as... If you see yourself in the mirror...
Yes.
And you recognise it as yourself...
Yes.
You're cleverer than a dog.
Can dogs not recognise themselves in mirrors?
I don't think so, no.
Really?
Yeah. And that might be entirely untrue, but that's my understanding.
Right.
On a similar level... If you're in a car with a dog,
yes,
and you drive somewhere,
yeah,
does the dog know what's going on?
I don't know.
When you open the door and the dog gets out and he's somewhere else,
yeah.
does he realise what's just happened?
Right, I don't know.
Well, I don't either. I suspect some do and some don't.
Yeah, I think some dogs probably recognise themselves in the mirror.
You think? Okay,
well, yeah. Oh, apparently we've run out of time, but that's, we'll come back to this on Thursday or whenever you're next in, John.
Yeah, well, I'll look it up for next time.
Oh, crikey, I can't believe we've come to the end of the show.
Oh, yeah.
And we never asked you, John.
Oh, yeah.
New Year's Eve, I saw a tweet from you, 499. Yeah. And then what happened?
I went to the fridge. And
You're kidding.
I picked out
a
grapefruit IPA. No, I was just at home. Just you know,
this story can't end this way.
No, it was...
Oh, that's how sideways ends. And he is very much the sideways of beers.
The yeah. sideways of beer.
The journey
no, I'm,
of discovery and...
he's also the doppelganger of one of the
Paul
characters. Paul Giamatti.
Yeah. Yeah. But can you rework that as some kind of mad dash across town to the last pub selling the last beer that you haven't tried, you know, and midnight's about to strike, and then, you know, something happens. When cameras roll on this baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually,
we're going to need another ending.
If you'd let me finish.
Oh, did you drink the beers?
I went to the fridge.
Yeah. And then what happened?
And pulled out a grapefruit IPA.
Yeah. And
noticed that it was out of date.
No.
And had to. The chimes of the clock at the church tower. At the end of the street, it just started ringing.
So you had literally
12 seconds?
No, more than that. About 20 seconds. Did you neck it?
I ran down to the offie and found something interesting. No, it doesn't really work.
You failed.
No, I drank it all. Oh. Yeah, I drank 501 in the end.
Did you?
I had time enough to... Well, actually, I think I've probably had about 510, but at least half a dozen have got lost in the midst of time.
What have you learned? John.
What have I learned?
Yeah, what would be the moment at the end that, when the final scene, when they're there, the dust is settling, and you turn and you say,
I'd sort of say, I don't want to drink any more beer.
Really?
It was really nice to go to the pub the other day, and, well, I did have beer, but I could have what I wanted rather than...
That's the end scene, isn't it? Yeah. You go to the pub, and...
I'll have one of those.
And somebody offers you a beer, and you kind of...
I can take it rather than saying, no, I've had that already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
But it's been a long, hard journey,
It certainly has.
I need to thank, obviously my family and my friends, and the barman in the King's Head who helped me out a few times. And, there were dark times. And, people around me said, come on, John, just have another drink. Just drink this beer. And, I needed that at times. And I really appreciate it.
Okay.
So is your project for 2016 to attend 300... Alcoholics Anonymous meetings? Or?
I think I might just read a book or something.
Really?
Plan.
Really?
Yeah, something. Or maybe it was mentioned
to
attempt 365 different animal parts, to eat 365 animal parts. I don't even know if there are 365 different animal parts.
Guessing there are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if it'd be remotely possible or legal to do it.
I can recommend ostrich steak. Very good.
Mm, there you go.
Are you an ostrich steak?
Topical. Mm.
Brilliant, John. All right. Well, perhaps listeners will have ideas of 500 things you could do this year. Anyway, assuming anyone's still listening, of course. that's it very much for today's Football Weekly. Happy New Year to you, listeners. We'll be back on Thursday building up to the magic of the Cup, etc. For now, many thanks to John Ashdown and congratulations, John. I think I speak for everybody.
Cheers, James.
Rafa Honigstein, Barry, good to have you back.
Thank you.
Ben, the producer, and you, listener, see you Thursday.